Hello, and welcome to the 16th episode of Let's Talk Iran, providing Iranian-American perspectives on current events and policies that shape U.S.-Iran relations and affect the Iranian-American community. This program is brought to you by the National Iranian-American Council, otherwise known as NIAC. I'm Novair Elmi, and I'll be your host. I'm here today with Dr. Trita Parsi. Trita is not only the president and co-founder of NIAC, but he's also an award-winning author. Trita's second book, entitled A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran, was released earlier this year. In it, Trita uncovers the previously unknown story of American and Iranian negotiations during Obama's early years as president, the calculations behind the two nations' dealings, and the real reasons for their current stalemate. Thank you, Trita, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Early on in Obama's presidency, he made the unprecedented effort to engage in diplomacy with Iran, and more specifically to reach out to the Iranian people. Since then, however, we've seen a shift towards the use of crippling sanctions, as well as his continued insistence that all options are on the table when dealing with Iran. Trita, why this shift, and was there a particular incident or episode that triggered this change?
Thank you, Nobar. There has been a shift, and I think there is a conventional wisdom that says that diplomacy failed. But I think in reality, diplomacy was abandoned. And I say this because at the end of the day, diplomacy cannot be a one-off meeting, nor can it be just an exchange of ultimatums. I think the Obama administration's intent for diplomacy was genuine, but from the very second he entered into office, his vision for diplomacy was compromised, both because of pressure from Congress, from Israel, from France, from Saudi Arabia, but perhaps most importantly because of what happened in the Iranian elections in 2009 with the massive human rights abuses. That really reduced Obama's political space and his maneuverability to pursue diplomacy. By the time the parties finally could get to the table on October 1st, 2009, Obama's diplomacy, in the words of one of Obama's own officials who I interviewed for the book, had become a gamble on a single roll of the dice. Either it had to work right away or not at all. And almost never does diplomacy work in that fashion. Diplomacy takes time, it takes patience, it takes a lot of political capital and investment. But Obama felt essentially that he had no capital left to spend on this issue. Now, why do I call it abandoned? Because only 6 months later, the Turks and the Brazilians managed to get the Iranian government to put its signature on an agreement based on the very same benchmarks as the previous agreement that the U.S. had put in front of Iran. Had there only been 6 months more of political space, patience, and capital, there could have been a deal there. A deal that would have opened the way for broader negotiations, which hopefully would have also then included other issues beyond the nuclear issue, such as human rights and security in the region as a whole.
With the 2012 presidential campaign season well underway, do you think that President Obama has the political space necessary to make the decisions he wants? Or do you think he's just succumbing to the pressure posed by, you know, pro-war lobbying groups and some of the GOP candidates?
It's a really scary period right now because on the one hand, the stakes are higher than ever before. At this point, 3 years after he first reached out to Tehran, we are probably closer to some form of a military confrontation than ever before. At the same time, his political maneuverability is at its minimum because of the elections. And I think the rhetoric coming out of the GOP primaries is as irresponsible as some of the rhetoric coming out of Tehran, in which that has also had the effect of just heightening tensions and further souring the atmosphere.
You know, some would argue, though, that if there was a military conflict or some sort of, you know, covert action or overt action that's being taken now, that that would ensure the president's, re-election to a second term, kind of like was done with Bush. You know, if he started the war, he has to be there to finish the war. Do you think that's true?
I think there are arguments for and against. I think on the one hand, you can make that argument because there usually is a rally around the flag type of a effect. But I think after the immediate effect, you would have a very negative effect on the economy. Gas prices would skyrocket, and when gas prices go up, it becomes more and more difficult to create jobs, and the economy would really suffer. And the final, the most decisive variable for Obama's re-elections is the economy. If he does anything now that would undermine the economy, then that's going to make it more difficult for him to get re-elected. So I would tilt in favor of the argument that war would not be in favor of Obama's re-election gambit.
So you say that President Obama's ability to make the decisions he wants has been basically, it's been much more difficult for him because he doesn't have the space he needs. Provided he wins his re-election, do you think his stance will change? Do you think he'll kind of revert back to his initial positions and his willingness to negotiate and engage the Iranian people?
I think there is a desire in the White House. And again, I the book is based on interviews with both people from the Obama administration. I interviewed some of the Iranian negotiators, the officials from France, Britain, other EU countries, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Brazil, everyone who's been involved in this mix. And I would say that while there is some hope for that, it will not happen by itself. I think one of the big mistakes of the supporters of Obama has been that they were too relaxed, waiting for Obama to take care of this business, whereas in reality, he was in need of their support to create that political space for him to be able to continue and really invest in diplomacy instead of having this just single roll of the dice. If he is reelected, or whoever is elected, if there is a desire to prevent war and prevent these type of crippling sanctions that, in my estimation, only will bring about a more dangerous, a more repressive, a more undemocratic Iran, then there has to be more active participation and citizen pressure in order to move things in that direction.
From the Iranian perspective, they too are facing an upcoming election. What changes to U.S. foreign policy do you think may occur with a change in leadership there? And what else can Iranians do to meet Obama halfway, so to speak?
Well, the Iranian government has to play ball, and they have to also be willing to compromise. The issue is that there is so much distrust between the U.S. and Iran. Neither side is really willing to take an initial step or make an investment, take a risk for peace. There is, unfortunately, a far greater desire or inclination to take a risk for the status quo or for some form of escalation. There's much that Iran can do. First of all, of course, the rhetoric coming out of Tehran is not helpful. But if there is an agreement to cease activities in Fordo, for instance, that would be quite helpful, and it could certainly create additional space in 2012 and offset any risk of an Israeli attack. But in order for the Iranians to do that, I find it very unconvincing that Tehran would agree to this unless there are some sanctions lifted, either from the U.S. or from the European side.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so I have just one last question for you. For your book, you interviewed 70 high-ranking officials from the U.S., Iran, Europe, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Brazil. Can you talk a little bit about the differing perspectives? What was the most surprising discovery or takeaway from these interviews?
I think there was the image that emerged was how detailed the efforts were to try to do something and to see the calculations on all sides. And really to see how terribly afraid people are in changing their patterns. One of the officials said that when you've done something the same way for 30 years, that's quite powerful. And whenever you try to change that and it doesn't work immediately, it's very easy, it's very comfortable to go back to the very same patterns that you've pursued for the last 30 years. That pattern, however, is a pattern of hostility, enmity, and it's increasingly driving this towards the edge of a military confrontation. The pattern has to change, but it cannot change without courage, and it cannot change without having leaders and a populace on both sides that are demanding that courage.
Thank you, Trita, so much for being with us. Sing a Roll of the Dice is available on Kindle, Amazon, and in hard copy. To learn more about Trita Parsi, visit www.tritaparsi.com. And as always, please be sure to visit NIAC online at www.niacouncil.org.